This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Sandy Kearney, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 100, Malaria, Ebola, and Freemium Games.
Welcome, my friends, to another episode of Games at Work.biz. I am your co-host, Phaedra Boinodiris, joined here by Mr. Michael Martin and Michael Rowe. How are you doing today, Michael?
I'm doing just terrific. It's nice to see you in person. It's been a long time since we've done that. Hey, Michael, how are you doing?
Doing well. It's a beautiful day in Research Triangle Park here and wonderful conference room with lots of bouncy walls. So really excited for the show. Phaedra, thank you.
This is a very, very special episode for multiple reasons. Number one, this is our 100th episode. We made it to the triple digits.
What a great
400 more to go.
400, okay. And another reason why this is a special show is because we're joined here by two guests. We've got Porter Stoll, who has been a guest on our show before.
Hello. Good to be back.
And we're also joined here by Jonathan Estes, the CEO of Smart Game Systems, Inc.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Welcome. So we've got all kinds of stuff, as you said, Phaedra, to talk about. But, you know, before we dig too deep into episode 100 and all the cool stuff, I did have to call out a really cool episode of South Park this week. In line with our show.
Our general theme.
Our general theme, because yeah. Everybody knows that freemium is better, right?
What's better for people who want to earn money.
Yes. We've talked about freemium many times, so I won't go too deep on it. But go to the show page on the website. Look at the video from South Park on the definition of how to develop your own freemium game that hits every single positive point.
It is very funny. Looking for a good laugh.
So, Phaedra, you have guests with us. Tell us what's going on and what are they working on?
Yes, like I said, I'm joined here by Porter and Jonathan. And Jonathan is the CEO of a company that is dedicated to, well, let me let him say it in his own words. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Sure.
Tell us about your company and what you're up to.
Yes, well, we're based here in the Research Triangle Park area, and we formed in 2012. We're a group, actually, of consultants that bring also game development to corporations that are interested in using game theory, game development. We basically are using the term serious games for them to have an impact on their behavior change, on strategy, and on innovation.
What kinds of customers are you working with, and what kinds of problems are you finding are natural fits for strategy games?
The first two contracts that we actually implemented are in the global health arena. So one of them is with the group called Jipigo, which is a subsidiary of Johns Hopkins, and they wanted to address the issue of communication and behavior change for practitioners in sub-Saharan Africa in the maternity clinic. So we built a board game for them that addressed those issues. And the other client was actually funded by the Gates Foundation to address the issue of malaria vector control. That's a video game. We developed a pilot, a game that was deployed also in sub-Saharan Africa just this summer. And the goal was for strategy on addressing some key issues on how to eliminate mosquitoes through pesticides more effectively.
And when you first brought these games to the attention of the customer, did you have to convince them as to why they would be interested in using a game? What was their initial reaction, and then how did their concepts associated with the medium change over time?
In the case of Jipigo, I'd actually worked with them 10 years ago for a period of 3 years on simulations. So a little bit difference between a game and a simulation was not a big stretch for them. What we had done before was on HIV/AIDS, and that was to simulate 50 patients that a practitioner would try to cure or to implement strategies for making them healthier through the three-drug combination of HIV/AIDS. In the game aspect, they recognized that what we were bringing was a lot more interaction and competitiveness in the application, so that there were more motivation for people to actually finish the game, but also to extract new insights that they normally would not get. We liken it to, you know, the difference between sending a rat through a maze. There's a cheese at the end, you get the right answer, but you don't really do it again. You know, it's a one-off experience. In games, you have replayability, and that was something they were really excited about.
So talk a little bit about that, because, you know, sports games are great for replayability, mm-hmm. right? If you're, you know, playing Madden NFL or something like that, the outcome is going to be different all the time.
Right.
So what did you do in this game to help the patients be different enough so that the practitioner can go back and play it again?
Well, in the original simulation, this was a product called Therosim. This was back in the mid-2000s, but it was mainly to give the same patients, and it was meant to give a rapid application for thousands of practitioners that were not doctors access to information and learn how to treat patients with complex disease. In the case of the game, this actually addressed more kind of nuanced issues around a doctor and nurse midwife relationships that are normally affected by culture, affected by socioeconomic level. There's actually impact on patients when they don't communicate well. And this game is actually like a role-play game on a board that they play over the course of an hour. And every time they play, they notice that they would effectiveness of how many patients were treated more effectively over time was increased.
So on the HIV/AIDS one, was that around compliance for medical protocol?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and you get the right answer.
Right. So that's a maze game, and the second one is that replayability where you gain more and more insight on effectiveness of treatment based off of better communications.
Correct.
Got it. Okay. Cool.
And in the case of the malaria game, that also has a lot of replayability capability. The issue is there's a large amount of data that's available for elimination of mosquitoes, and we have a minimum number of pesticides available. If we use the wrong pesticide in the wrong year or overdose it, or usually through graft or other means, right. It's partitioned in a way that ends up being non-usable. Each of those pesticides cost $60 million in years to produce, so they can't afford to have those misappropriated. This game is meant to increase the awareness of a variety of different roles to understand their impact on the system. So a person who does the spraying on houses, the person who makes the plan for the 5 years of coming up, the entomologist who goes out and does an assessment of the mosquitoes and finds which ones match the pesticide more effectively, all those factors come into play, and you get to change your role to actually implement your strategy, and every time it resets. So it's a different game and a different experience every time. What happens is everyone gets an understanding of how the system works.
I would assume that in the malaria vectors, given the efficacy of the various insecticides and the short life cycle of the mosquito, that if you don't apply it correctly, you can actually build up tolerance of mosquitoes to certain pesticides?
Usually within 3 or 4 generations, one season. Yeah. That's all it takes.
So there's an effectiveness incentives, there's the financial incentives, there's definitely the health incentive overall. So lots of interesting incentives that drive the engagement in a game that, we say, it's a serious game here. It's not just fun.
Correct. We have 90 countries that are affected by malaria today. And because of climate change and other factors, it's growing to 120 countries in 5 years.
Wow.
So the issue, and we're down to 3 pesticides. We have a lot
remaining.
Just pump in DDT. Everything's fine.
Yes, that is there too.
I figured it was.
As a last resort.
Yeah. And,
you know, with all the Ebola news in the news right now, it seems like the training of healthcare professionals rapidly.
Chocolate sauce.
Healthcare professionals. Yeah, well, that's interesting for dealing with infections. But the point that I'm hearing more and more in the news is that we need more people who can be practitioners in the field. And part of it is, how do we enable people that are already there to become more skilled? Do you see a demand coming up for that too, for these games?
We called next Wednesday actually from the CDC on this very subject.
Yeah.
Now, it does look more like a simulation to actually get the right answer, how you put the clothes on, this is right. How you take them off, that kind of thing. But there are strategy issues that need to be addressed. How are we going to, you know, increase the amount of protection we have on a, at a nationwide level. So in other settings, you were asking about what markets we're looking at. Security is one of the top themes that we're looking at as a aspect of using serious games for contingency planning, for security. All the tower defense games that are available out there, these are perfect models to be used for a variety of settings. Fine.
I can just see the
TSA example.
No, here this is where my brain goes. Tower defense freemium games, right? Clash of Clans, Clash of Mosquitoes, right?
Orcs must die.
That's right.
You can pay this much to go through this rapid line, or just go ahead and wait through that one.
Well, that's dealing with the treatment of Ebola patients and dealing with the community aspect. One of the things that was coming to mind is it's really easy in Western societies where there's a lot of money available in healthcare to have brand new gear every day or every time you deal with a patient. I'm wondering how the game would address the fact that in the societal space where it's home care or it's relatives treating their relatives who are infected that can't get to a major institutional hospital somewhere to deal with, yeah, I know I can't touch them. I know I've got to keep stuff clean, but I've only got three pairs of clothes, right? So how do I actually deal with that? And then how do you enforce the idea that, yes, but you have to wash a certain way, et cetera, in order to keep that effectiveness of the barrier? And I don't know if that's something that you're looking at in the gaming aspect. I know there's medical aspects there too.
Yes. Well, we experienced, I was actually quite surprised. I actually went to Sub-Saharan Africa in June and July for testing our games.
Okay, 21 days, we're good.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right, 21 days. So, not the affected areas. However, the amazing thing was I always ask how many people play games and what's the frequency and things like that. Most of them said that these were practitioners that are in the healthcare industry that that were from those countries. Most of them had not played games since they were young. Very few, and I'd say zero, played video games. So the exposure to actually using this technology was really, really low. And not because they didn't have access to computers or mobile devices. It was mainly just a cultural thing, not part of that culture. But they caught on extremely rapidly. And transfer, what we're finding now is that when we go back, we're going back actually in early next year, but the feedback that we're getting now is that these games are being replayed, that there is, according to managers around them, that there is a transfer from the game to their workplace. That's what we're really looking for. That transfer. Now, there are other games that I'm aware of that we haven't implemented yet, but when you look at applying the kind of immersive games that you wake up with only, you know, a bottle of water and your pocket knife in the middle of nowhere, and you're not really told what to do.
Yes.
That those kinds of games, you're given limited resources to solve a problem. We can adjust those games to any scenario and start from there. So in the case of the maternity clinic, we actually have clinics that we scale depending on who's in the room, who's actually playing it. We actually create games where you play the maternity clinic with limited resources, so it matches their experience as closely as possible.
So you made a point about mobile devices, and that got me to think too about, yeah, you know, what is available to play the games. Board game obviously is the board, right? But as you're going to more computer driven sort of things, are you aiming toward mobile devices, aiming for very limited screens, text-based things, as well as graphics? How does that work?
Yes, I mean, depending on what contract we're working on. But from the corporate standpoint, our other target audiences, we're looking at mobile games. It's just like the entertainment world is starting to shift that direction away from the traditional devices. But desktop and mobile devices are the direction we're headed in. And mainly that's has to do with getting access to better data. So in the case of the malaria game, we have Gates-funded database that's been around for 15 years, but really underutilized, mainly because it's rows and columns in a spreadsheet that's massive. It's got 8 terabytes of information, but most of the people on the ground don't access it. And all the answers are there, but it's really about visualization, about seeing the effect of their decisions before they make them. Games have a platform that allows you to do that.
Oh.
And
I was just thinking around availability of technology.
Yeah.
And I saw a Kickstarter this week that was a Raspberry Pi-based portable game tablet that basically ran the MAME emulator. So all the old Atari 8-bit games ran on this, and so you're looking at $100 for a, you know, it's got the joysticks, it's got a screen, it's touchscreen cable, Raspberry Pi, etc. And as an entry point for certain areas, it might be a great way of exposing games and really reducing the development cost too, because I'm doing 8-bit graphics, not high-end, you know, full 3D graphics, etc. I was wondering if you are you looking at that type of platform?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at a cost of $40, you know, per piece, and then adding a small screen to it. We're looking actually at hybrid board game integrated with a Raspberry Pi engine, so you can actually access data while you're moving your pieces around and have that double visualization.
Yeah, you know.
Very cool.
The other
as he pulls out.
I'm trying to find the other half of my little toy set up here.
And for those of you who are listening,
nice.
That was a Raspberry Pi.
Raspberry Pi, and I found this keyboard for recently, and basically it's, see, I'm the guys on the podcast, you got that? Very good. Okay, so this is has a built-in little Bluetooth plug that pops into your Raspberry Pi and gives you a full keyboard and trackpad. And it was roughly, I think it was twice the price of the Raspberry Pi for the keyboard. But it's, you know, not much bigger. It's probably, what, 50% bigger than the Raspberry Pi itself. And I'll put links to both of these in the show notes for everybody. But a great way of setting up a little MAME emulator. All you need is a display and, say, $40 for a little small display.
It's awesome, yeah. The other benefit is, with board games, you don't get the benefit of collecting data. And what we'd like to do is have that integration so when you get the results of the game or the movements they make, those are all captured, just like a video game would capture them.
And you can tweak then the rules of the game
exactly.
as you need to.
You can adjust it, do expansions a lot easier, things like that.
Can you talk a little bit more about cultural transformation and how are people perceiving this as compared to more traditional means of doing change management?
Yeah, well, that's something you and I have been talking a lot about. It's actually quite difficult to convey. Because games have a lot of baggage. Traditionally, we've experienced games in corporate settings or games in our educational experience as being that extra activity, that add-on thing, or maybe it's an adaptation of an existing game. So if we have Monopoly, we might add some kind of acronym at the front of it to say we're doing this special game activity related and using Monopoly as the platform. But actually, when I describe, there's a lot of neuroscience and educational research that's demonstrating that gameplay moves people's minds in unique ways. There's what they call the kind of plasticity of the brain, all that I've read that indicate that you actually are increasing your mindset, expanding your perspective. And it translates directly back to workplace or whatever setting you may have. So those kinds of studies are increasing. There aren't that many of them out there. But the implication that we're making for corporations, for educational institutions, for agencies that are looking to use serious games for strategy development and for behavior change, that there is a lot more available for them to access, make use of.
Yeah, I would just say, you know, this is Porter. I work with Phaedra at IBM, and we've been working with John on a number of different clients, and it's been really interesting just how many people we've talked to say, I hired some management consultants to help me with change management, and I just don't feel like they're doing anything. And people are frustrated with how tough it is to do behavior change, and they're looking for any and all tools to speak to their employee base in a way that they can have a more engaging dialogue. And, you know, is there a way to represent, you know, as you talked about with malaria vector control, you're having people playing different roles to create a systems view. So through experimentation, you know, you begin to give someone that agency to determine, okay, this is how this is working within my organization or in this environment. How is that really different than what a company is trying to do? So you're you know, we're using games like Malaria Vector Control as the test case to illustrate the points, but all those components can be applied in a number of different ways to give people that systems view, play different roles, see, you know, have some agency over the outcome, and, you know, try to separate themselves from their own personal viewpoints, prejudices, and, you know, most of the time in a business setting, they're trying to protect their current job or team. Like, how do you disassociate that connection?
Well, sometimes you can take the game and you have somebody play a role that is completely opposite
Absolutely.
To their interests, right?
Right.
So today I get to play the role of malaria.
Yeah.
So guess what? I'm going to get you guys.
That right. game is out there.
It's, I love that yeah. game. They did the simian flu version, if you yeah. remember that. That was
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah, there's an Ebola version.
Yeah. Like yeah. HQ or something like
yeah,
that. Yeah.
yeah, great timing for that too. By the way, oh, there's an update.
You want another one? Yeah, I was actually listening to NPR. I think it was yesterday on the way home from work, and they were talking about MERS.
Yes,
right,
MRSA.
MERS.
MERS. Oh,
okay. Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome. It's based okay. right. They had. It's a. Oh, I'm gonna get the name of the term, but my brother studies these.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Can't remember it. But they were talking about that one, you know. First we had SARS, and then we got MERS, and I'm like, yeah, great, okay. And the scientist that they had on was great. He was local at UNC, saying, and everybody can die, and it'll spread around the world. All it has to do is mutate. Like, okay,
that's
yes,
all we need to do.
Anything can mutate, and everybody dies.
Yeah, I saw the Dustin Hoffman movie too.
Yeah. It's like, you know, they got the right guy to just spin fear.
Yeah.
Media waiting and writing everything down.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Mutation!
I thought the funniest thing recently was watching the theme of The Walking Dead to the speech given by the governor of Texas.
Oh, I hadn't seen that one.
It was. It just gave me this overwhelming sense of, oh, no.
Well, the statistic I saw, real statistic, that 12% of Americans think that either them or their family members will contract Ebola within 2 months.
Yeah, yeah. And there was another thing that I listened to is On the Media, which is a study of journalism and how it's treated and things like that. Anyway, but they were talking about the more we hear Ebola stuff on the news, even when it's right, which right. it's not right most of the time, the more people fear and know less about Ebola. The more they think, yes, it's extremely contagious, and all I do is look at you if you're in the same room with me and you breathe. And it's like, okay, so the more you educate the people in this example, the less they know. What was it, the NBC? The more you know.
The more you know. Yeah.
Right. So you have a Kickstarter campaign about to start and a new game coming out.
Yes. So we actually have, when we started the company, I actually had been dabbling with game development. So a couple of them have been in development over 4 years, and we've been testing them and expanding that circle of testing. This game is called Smart Green Heroes, and it's actually based on a book I wrote in 2009 called Smart Green. And it's a sustainability game. You play a small company trying to green your supply chain, and you're working in cooperation with 3 other companies that are trying to do the same thing. So you can share your resources, but not just enough that the other can gain an advantage over you. So your goal is to be the first company to green your supply chain over the others in a cooperative environment. We took this to Gen Con over the summer, and cool. some of the comments were really interesting because, you know, the concept of serious games is first impression, I don't want to play that. It doesn't sound fun. Or also, most of the educational games are not fun. They just tend to be very mathy. You know, you just kind of do the same thing over and over again and not interesting.
Draw angles.
Hey, don't knock the Dragon Box stuff. My kids were actually fighting.
Did you play it after the show?
Yeah, so I don't know if you know about the
Dragon
Box.
No. So, sorry, I had to divert us on that because it's like it was a mathy game that teaches your kids geometry without them realizing they're teaching them geometry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the claim.
So, kids
very mathy. And I was looking at the video and they're like, draw a circle, figure out the angle here because of the, you know, the bisecting line. I'm like, okay, yeah. I mean, I like that stuff because I like math. But I'm weird. So
So So what other responses did you get?
Well, we got the response of, okay, I'll give you guys a chance. Yeah. You know, yeah. And these are groups of gamers at Gen Con, if you've ever been to a conference like that. These are the roaming four, you know, that they play everything, and they can break your game in 5 minutes. So they loved it. So they said, I'm really surprised. This was actually good. I'd make one tweak, and that's it. You know, so we also have reviewers going through and saying, this is a great balance between learning something and learning, you know, something you really didn't know that much about before, but also great game dynamics that make it replayable for different age groups. So for that, we're actually launching in mid-January. There is a website up for Smart Green Heroes at Kickstarter now. I just spent the last couple of weeks doing that. Those little videos where you have to describe why you built it, and here it is. And
we'll have a link that in the show notes.
I will link that for you.
Were you holding your breath at Gen Con when they were playing your game?
Yes, I was.
And was the one tweak, can you put it in a first-person shooter and make sure that the resources are bullets?
Green bullets.
Sustainable bullets.
No, they're very good at finding the one strategy quickly that will break or win every time. They said, kind of... descale or declaw this character right here, and you will have a balanced game.
Awesome.
You find one thing, you get, then it really balanced it out. The other game we developed that will come out a few months after that is also a sustainability or climate change related game. This one's much more complicated. It's taken longer for us to fully develop, but it's called Gaia.
You played it.
Yep. And it takes the idea of being a country, and why answers the question, why is it so difficult for us to make the tough choices for these long-term strategies to fend off climate change impacts? And a lot of it has to do with, keeping your country, you know, well-supplied, well-stocked, in power, and well-fed in relation to everyone else in competition for the same thing. So this game really addresses that issue. We also had that at Gen Con, and a lot of positive response.
Very cool.
That's great. I mean, it reminds me of Model UN, right? So going back to the Ebola conversation, it makes me crazy every time. It's like, oh, well, we didn't know what was going to happen, this and that. It's like, how many times have we done Model UN over the last 25 years where that is exactly the scenario and people close borders and do what they do? And I would imagine the same thing's going on right now on the sustainability front too, right?
It does.
So is this a game that would wind up scaling Gaia? Could it scale to be big enough that a Model UN kind of crowd might play it? Or
it could. In fact, we're invited to Virginia Commonwealth University at the beginning of December. There's going to be a large crowd on climate change community. That we're building a group version where teams of four or five work together as a country against 30 or 40 other countries all in one room.
Oh, fantastic.
So we have a screen on top with the whole globe, and every decision you make is moving the climate change graph further, you know, so they have to all send delegates to each other to negotiate treaties and laws.
It's the clock and watchman. I saw it. It's the Ebola clock in the Ebola-opoly game.
Very cool. That'll be fantastic. Yeah. And I'm sure the images that'll come out of that would be just amazing to see, too.
Yes.
Very NASA-esque is what I'm imagining at the moment.
Yeah, so the aspect of this being focusing our energies on board games, I wanted to mention that we've noticed that in order to have a good response from, let's say, any organization that we're working with, they often will want to put their foot in the water very slowly. They want to try something out. We also realized that these games are very complex. They use a lot of data that sometimes building it in the board game version gets the kind of game dynamic kinks out of the way. It also makes them really, you got to make sure that they're fun to play and replayable. The investment that's required for a video game is very high, so you want to test these out early.
But also, they have their aha moment early.
Correct.
Yeah, and the one thing we've seen, speaking with a number of clients, is you're finding people who get games effectiveness across a wide number of challenges. That's not the problem. It's getting their bosses and leadership and management to buy in on it as well. And that's where board game, no one really has these big budgets at their fingertips. It's everything's a consensus sale nowadays. So, you know, how do you deal with someone who has limited budget?
get them to be a champion for you. That's where the board game really plays an interesting role.
I thought you were going to bring it home here and say, and that's why we do these as freemium games.
I have been biting.
Get your employees to put a little bit of their budget in each time they play.
I've been biting my tongue this whole podcast because I didn't, for the anyone listening, I didn't want to give away the South Park, and I wanted to quote it nonstop, but I'm like, no, they have to go watch the clip.
They have to watch the clip.
It's got to be fun, but not too fun.
Not too fun.
But you can make it more fun.
Yeah. If you, and it's got to be a waiting game.
But to not wait, okay.
The purpose of the game is to wait. Or to hurry up, wait.
Yeah.
By the way, have I showed you this great new game that I'm playing? Never mind.
Have you guys done a podcast on Cow Clicker?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh,
yes. He matter of fact, Ian Bogost was the guy who created that, and he was on our show. Cool. So, wow, that's awesome. So much good stuff that you're doing there, and I can't wait for your Kickstarter. I'm sure we'll talk about it again in January when it launches, and sure. Get our listeners to support it. It'd be kind of fun. Model UN reference blows me away because I too was on Model UN back in the day. So maybe it was more than 25 years ago.
Maybe 26.
Something, yeah.
And speaking of the games and playing games too, one of the things we've been kicking around is we need to do some sort of game night board gaming ourselves. So while we're trying to get ourselves structured so that we can set up a board gaming evening somewhere,
I am totally up for that.
Out in the open,
yep.
And let's start ginning it up.
I just bought a copy of Terra Mystica and played it. You all played that game?
I've heard of it. I have not played it.
Okay, there's a lot of cubes to push around, but it is a fabulous game.
Awesome.
Terra Mystica.
Oh, I know a place locally that encourages game nights and sells beer.
Where?
Bean Traders. They're nighttime now, and they sell beer.
Oh, I didn't know they're open at night. Bean Traders.
Gotta have some beer.
Bean Traders.
Atomic
Terra
Empire
Mystica.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah. Another good place.
If you're a serious gamer, fire is a pint.
Or two.
But you don't want to be a board flipper when you have beer.
Oh, no.
Then the beer goes away.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this has been super interesting, and I'm like Michael. I can't wait to see the Kickstarter elements move forward, and for us to follow along in the meantime. And the VCU example, I'm sure, mm-hmm. is going to be an amazing success, and give you more learnings from there as well.
Yes.
The thing that the chord you struck with me on the supply chain side is that we focus on supply chain here as well. And greening of supply chain is also an important thing, and sorting out the right balance point of the economics in addition to the competitive aspect of it. I'm thinking about Mercedes and Toyota, Tesla kind of thing around battery and battery development as a great example of what you just talked a little bit about. So it'll be fun to play this, and maybe to invite some of our colleagues around the world to give it a go too.
Yeah.
Great. Very cool.
So we have maybe one or two more things that we wanted to touch in our hit parade for today, right? So something that we tweeted out earlier was about Click and Clack from last week. And for those of you who are not NPR listeners, and there are some of you outside the country, outside the U.S. that are not NPR listeners, these are the Car Talk guys, and they've had a radio show for how long has it been?
25 years. I mean, it's a very long
ridiculously
time.
Ridiculously long. And their show was ostensibly about car repair, but it really wasn't. It was about fixing people and fixing relationships. And
With their cars.
Through cars.
And settling bets.
And paying for the next boat payment for your mechanic.
Yes. There's that too. So it was with a heavy heart that I learned. I actually saw this from a Facebook post from my wife first that... one of the brothers had passed away. It turned out that he had Alzheimer's for quite some time, and the article read that when he said he couldn't remember last week's Puzzler, he probably couldn't remember last week's Puzzler. But he just passed away, and I wanted to send a shout-out to them for the podcast here, and to say that it's one of the things that they did that inspired me to do what we're doing here. This is supposed to be... fun. They brought fun to a very serious news network and helped lighten things up a lot. So My tweet said, I hope every repair that you're making is a perfect repair. And the perfect repair in their mind was you get 10 miles down the road and your car breaks again.
And you have to come back to the garage.
Perfect repair.
You feel happy until you leave.
Perfectly.
Yeah. Also, listen to that podcast and live on the radio when it was on for a long time. Great show. Lots of fun. And you're right. It's what we do here. We try to take a serious topic and have fun with it. Hence, playing games at work.
I think we're going to open up the call line.
Yeah, we're going to open up the callers. Caller one, hello. You're on the air.
No last names, please. So Phaedra had one other game to chat with us about from Down Under. Well, not quite. Well, yeah, it's Down Under.
It's Down Under.
Yes, yeah. I want to do a shout out for a game called Sparks that was funded by the government of New Zealand to treat depression. And apparently this game actually made it through clinical trials. And according to some sources I read, that they proved that that players who played this game, players who were being treated for depression, showed better results through gameplay than through either therapy or medication. So what the government of New Zealand has done is they have made this game freely available to all New Zealanders through their mental health system. And what was most surprise to us when we read about this this game and saw some screenshots from it is that it's a role-playing game. And for whatever reason, I was always imagining a game to treat depression would be kind of like, you remember the game Flower? You're the
flower floating through.
And you're sort of blowing petals around to nice music, but that is not the case, apparently.
No, this is a first-person shooter, right?
or Echo the Dolphin, right? That sort of thing.
Yeah.
Right? You know, splash, relaxing. But anyway, I thought that was really interesting. I wanted to share it with our audience.
So did this game come out before or after Facebook started doing their experimentation on manipulating your newsfeed?
Yes. That's a good question. I'm not sure what the answer is.
And we can't know for a fact because we can't get to the site because we're not New Zealand.
No, that's okay. You said you could fix that.
I can fix it for me, but I'm not paying for everybody's VPN.
Oh, maybe the spoofed VPN. Oh, well.
I think we should wrap here and just give everybody a shout out to what game you might be playing right now. And Jonathan, we'll start with you.
I just mentioned the one I'm playing is Terra Mystica. I played the Chaos Magicians and came in second. It's a fascinating game. It does take about 4 or 5 hours to play, but it's worth
every moment.
Every moment.
Excellent. Awesome. Phaedra.
I'm a judge for the Serious Games Showcase and Challenge, and I've been given a stack of games to play, about 30 long right now, going through and enjoying a lot of them, which I can't really name. I named a few last week. Last week was very interesting. Not to name names, but that's what I'm up to.
Yeah, whatever you do, don't go back to last week's episode and listen. Comment on the show page or tweet about it or respond on Facebook. Don't do that. Whatever you do.
Anyway, next.
So right now, the game I'm playing is called Corporate Drone. No. Actually, I'm getting excited for the launch in, I think it's a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks, of the latest expansion of World of Warcraft to just consume the rest of my life. So I've been playing the beta since early June. And they've really done a lot to change the gameplay. Some of it good, some of it not so good. And I'm really looking forward to see how many other people quit and how many people join. So,
Interesting. So I have not been suckered in by the new Lord of the Rings Online game.
Looks horrible,
doesn't it? Though
it looks horrible.
So instead, I'm preparing for my Sousaphone Hero game. Not to be confused with Guitar Hero, but I will be performing soon, so that'll be not this Saturday, but next Saturday, and you'll find me on the field in Keenan Stadium.
Really? Yeah. Get out. That's cool.
Yeah.
This is the
alumni
the
band.
I was about to say, the alumni band.
Did you bring it out during Halloween? No, you brought out some other thing. What was it? The Vuvuzela. Tell them that story real quick. That's great.
You think so?
No.
It's funny.
No, it's horrible. Go ahead.
All right. So the fast story is we are data geeks in our household. We keep track and record of how many people, kids, come to our house for every Halloween. And we did this even though
I saw the posts with the pictures.
We weren't around for the last 2 years because we were in Budapest. So our house sitter was keeping track for us, and we thank her for that. So we have all our data points. We knew that this being a Friday, we knew that being good weather and warm weather, that we were going to have a out-and-out record, and we did. So
was it a 78 or a 45 long play?
It was a 45.
Okay.
So we wound up having 1,008 trick-or-treaters at our door. Woo-hoo! By the end. So
wow,
it was absolutely nuts. And the point that Fader was on was, as we were getting close to the magic 1,000 mark, you know the reference I'm making. So my son used our Vuvuzela to attract attention from the last few trick-or-treaters roaming the neighborhood.
We've got candy,
and we're trying to get to 1,000.
So no one called the police hearing a Vuvuzela? Those things are loud.
Well, they can be, especially if you know how to play a sousaphone. But I did not play it. I did not play it. It was used more as a megaphone than anything else. So, Vuvuzela.
And Porter, what are you playing right now?
I am testing out a new game for a partner of mine who is doing a new adaptation of Bomberman using time manipulation. So,
doing what?
Bomberman. With time manipulation. So basically, you move forward and backwards in time to see how your bomb strategy works out against their bomb strategy, and you're constantly readjusting.
It's a little spy versus spy kind of action.
Absolutely.
There, isn't it?
Absolutely. Real time
strategy.
It's
like the ultimate economist game, right? Where you're doing game theory and you go, well, if you do that, I'll do this, but you know I'll do that, so you'll do this instead, and I know that you'll do that if I do that, so I'll do this.
And then you just paralyze yourself.
That's right. No, he doesn't. Yeah.
But then eventually.
And you blow up because it's Bomberman.
And you go down that rabbit hole until you're out of moves.
Yes.
And then awesome. You either win or lose.
Cool. Excellent. Well, thank you, everybody, for 100 episodes, Phaedra.
Yes, and one quick last shout-out, and that is that on Thursday at the North Carolina Museum of Life and Science in Durham, there's going to be a game theory night. So come out and join us. It's going to be fun. There'll be lots of local studios, local publishers there, and some folks from the Serious Game space.
I got one more question for the hosts here. Next 100 episodes, what do you want to see happen?
We want to reduce our audience by 50%.
I want to get
the
younger.
Feedback is just way too overwhelming. Yeah, younger sounds good too.
Yeah, we'll go back in time, get younger. Yeah. Right.
And if you can get younger, then I can get younger.
I want to play more games. So what I want to do is I want to play more games.
Right? Absolutely.
Because I think that we've had some good fun already, and for the next 100, there's going to be amazing things coming out. You know, malaria, Ebola, Serious Games.
MERS,
freemium Ebola. I mean, awesome stuff, right?
IS security, power defense games.
Yeah.
We're working on that too.
Oh, virus intrusion, right? Yeah, boom, got them.
Well, thank you everybody for a great 100 episodes and 100 more episodes to go. Actually, 400. The only reason I say that is if you look at every single episode, it'll say episode 1 of 500.
Oh.
2 of 500.
Why stop at 500?
We'll cross that bridge when we get there.
Noted.
Thanks, everybody.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.